Fred Film Radio, Locarno Film Festival, Switzerland.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 70th Locarno Festival, and I'm delighted to be joined by director Anup Singh, who's presenting his wonderful film, The Song of Scorpion, here at the festival. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's a great pleasure, and it's good to see you again.
Oh, yes. Delighted to have seen your latest film. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. I enjoyed every single second of it. But for our listeners, I'd love for you to maybe introduce it a little bit and tell us a little bit about the story.
Well, the story is very simple. It is a story about a young woman who is trying to learn a tradition of singing, which comes from her maternal tradition, you know, from her grandmother. She lives deep in the desert, and this singing has the power to heal people. If you're bit by a scorpion or a snake, if you're wounded, it is through singing that they bring the person back to life. Now, this woman, through certain circumstances, has to face some violence that destroys her, that takes her identity away from her, that forces her in a way to almost become an exile from where she was, almost an exile from her own body. And then the film is a journey that this woman takes to find that song in the desert which will heal her.
What are the origins of this story? Especially, I'm especially curious about this singing and healing.
Yeah. I don't know how to say this, so I'll just say the truth. The film came to me as a dream, you know, or let's call it a nightmare, you know. As you might be aware, in the past 10 years, there have been a lot of attacks on women in India, you know, and these attacks have been horrific. For many of us who have suddenly one day opened the newspaper and read about this horror, I think we have been poisoned for life, that what one human being can do to another. In many ways, this feeling of anxiety, of the pain of what we are doing to the women in our life, I think I've been carrying it for a long time. And it was during the time when I was finishing my last film that perhaps for a moment I was very tired, that suddenly it all came bubbling out of me in a dream. And I suddenly saw the whole film there. I woke up almost choking at about 3-4 a.m. and I just rushed to my office and wrote it down. So that's how it happened.
Yeah. And but the music, this thing about the music that can be healing, and then also it becomes the sort of a mission of the woman in the film who's looking for the song, like you said. I mean, where does that come from? There must be some connection between healing and song that's very important.
Yeah. As you know, the desert is a very, very important character in the film.
Oh, yeah.
So the thing about the desert is that it's dry, it's hard, it's demanding, and it can kill you. However, if you search in the desert, if you allow yourself to spend time there, to travel in its secrets, it also gives you water. You know, and as you know, from Jesus Christ to many prophets, poets, musicians, they seem to have found something in the desert, you know, and they have brought revelations and religions to human beings, which have healed us, you know. That is what the desert has gifted us, this healing of commandments, for example, or new religion, new thoughts, new philosophies. Many of them have come from the desert. So for me, it is like this young woman going into the harshness, the violence of the desert, and finding that the oasis, the water source, is actually inside herself. And that is what she finds. And she comes then with her song.
Well, speaking of the importance of the desert in this movie, of course, one of the things that I realized looking at landscapes like the desert, but not necessarily only the desert, is that there's a sense of timelessness to it. And I notice as well that modern times in this film kind of clash with this sort of timelessness, or even older times. So can you tell me a little bit about that? Was that a point of interest for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we are in a time again where we wake up every morning and we see something that disturbs us all the time. Newspapers, television, We see, you know, what is happening in the world around us. And we are very, very keen to try and find an answer. How do we live in this world today? You know, and we have tried many things. And we have tried rationalities, we've tried governments, we've tried diplomacies, you know, and nothing seems to have taken us across. One thing that all the arts do, and cinema, of course, is that they open us to our imagination. Suddenly we can think not as to what we are, but what we can be. What is our possibility, you know? So the timelessness of the film, if you want to call it that, is really my attempt to say to us that we are not complete, that we are not finished, that we are not defined. We don't have one identity, but we are possibilities. And we need to use our imagination to become more.
I was surprised to find that the film was set in modern times. And it only dawned on me when one of the characters, when Irfan says, oh, everyone has a mobile phone now. So is this also a way to point out that the characters of this film are almost ignoring an advancement, the modern aspects of the contemporary times?
That's a very insightful question. And it is true. You know, it happens in many patriarchies, traditional systems of belief that blind you to many of the advances happening around you. But I must say that these kind of patriarchal societies don't only belong to communities or religious societies or whatever. This kind of patriarchy is also what we see in our governments today, that we only see what we want to see and everything else is wrong. All right? So the timelessness of the film for me is actually very important, because what I'm trying to say really is that this timelessness is how we would like things to be. But the truth is that we are ignoring the world around us, you know. And when we actually have to face this world because of, let's say, rejection, or we have to face this world because we don't get what we want, then our reaction to not getting what we want is of a size and of a cruelty and a brutality which is way beyond our otherwise, you know, reasoned relationship.
Yeah. So, in other words, patriarchy, a patriarchal system, always opts for possession and power. And when it cannot be achieved, it only leads to negative things happening. And sometimes this repression leads to violence.
It leads to violence, which against women we have called, let's say, rape. And it leads to war in the case of governments.
Right. And so, yeah, women especially are victims of this system. And so this was also an important aspect of your movie.
I think, you know, that there is in this world a need that we seem to feel that we need to be hard, that we need to be strong, that we need to be almost invulnerable, you know. And women are seen to be the opposite of that. They seem to be more sensitive to not only their family, but they seem to be sensitive to outsiders, you know. To their friends, to, you know, they're always going outside what many would like to just contain and limit, all right? Yeah. And I think that creates a lot of anxiety in those who want to be invulnerable. And this invulnerability, again, excuse me for repeating this, is not only something that certain men in certain societies carry, right? This fear of what the outside world might do to challenge us and make us question our beliefs. It's not simply that. Or it's not simply them. But I think this is more and more the attitude, this kind of patriarchy, which has become a leading feature in many of the governments in our world today. That the other country, you know, is like this feminine creature that can be attacked, that can be harassed, that can be aggressed, that can be raped, and that can finally be destroyed. Because we are the strong ones. And we have to always prove to ourselves and to the larger world that we are the strong ones. You know, we are invulnerable. But this sense of celebrating invulnerability is, I think, one of the saddest human reactions to our world. It is precisely our fragility, our vulnerability, our openness to others that makes us the human beings that we are. Without our social interactions, which are on a level of mutual respect, of allowing dignity to each other, we will just end up in a world where maybe we have eternal war. That's all.
So, I mean, in your way of seeing, then, countries, let's use that term, are not only the geographical countries. To a man, a woman can be a different country as well. So there is this constant other that the patriarchal system is skeptical of, in a way. And so how do you communicate that in cinema? Is cinema a powerful tool to communicate that there's something else? In fact, if I can be more specific, in this film in particular, in your film in particular, the story of your film looks directly at one of the outcomes of this system. And then watching the movie, you expect, for instance, the woman to look like a victim, but she doesn't.
I think the power of that is our basic capacity to imagine. You know, that is what is beautiful about all of us, human beings, that we imagine. We do not simply accept things as they are. We imagine what they could be. You know, and that is what all art does, all cinema does, that it encourages us to allow our imagination to go free. All right, which means, in other words, it is saying to all of us that we are not simply what we believe we are or what we want to believe that we are. We actually have other possibilities. We can become much more, you know, and that is all that this film is about, that this woman who then chooses to avenge herself, she chooses to avenge herself in a creative way. It is not the kind of vengeance that, let's say, patriarchies would take. It is not the kind of vengeance that a man would dream about, you know, or plan. She takes a vengeance in a way which is much more creative.
Oh yeah, it is actually. And to go back to the title of the film, Song of Scorpion, music again is a starting point before the movie even begins, and then it becomes something deeper, because when I think about it, then this singing that we see right at the start of the film, it heals one from poison. But that, to me, if I see it on the more general aspect, then art is, like you said, heals from the poison that is all of the different problems that are happening in this fabric of society.
Absolutely. That is it, yes.
And music in particular, you're particularly attached to music as an art form.
Music is very important, because what music carries really directly to us is ambiguity.
Ah, yeah.
You know, it never tells you what exactly you should feel. You know, and even if it leads you into one feeling, the next moment it takes you elsewhere. So it tells you that we have great capacities. Emotionally, we are alive like a river in flow. You know, and every touch of the bank of the shore is different. You know, and that is what it gives to our spirit, music. That it tells us, my God, you know, I am so much more than what my identity is. I am so much more than my passport. I am so much more than my citizenship. You know,
yeah.
I am a human being.
Yeah. If you categorize yourself, you're lessening your ability to be free. In fact, I could even argue that the word freedom, saying the word freedom, restricts freedom itself. But
true.
That's very complicated. But we're very relaxed now, so I feel like I can ask you a little more complicated and interesting questions. I hope you'll forgive me for doing so. Earlier you said that this film came to you in a dream. I once heard conversations about the story. I don't remember exactly who it was who said it, but it stuck with me. And the person said, what we dream, when we dream it, we don't perceive it as a story. But in the moment we wake up, that's when we perceive it as a story. Is that the same thing that happened to you? And also, is that the same things that happens when you watch a film? When you make it, but also when you watch it?
I think you're absolutely right in terms of quoting whoever that person was.
Sorry, forgotten.
No, that's a great insight. And it's absolutely true. That dreams, do not make conscious connections. What the dreams do, or in my case, this nightmare, what they do is that they give you suggestions. They give you certain images which are potent and which say something to you, but they don't say it. All right? They hold back. And it is in the awakening of yourself from that dream nightmare that you try and make some sense out of it. That you say, what is it in my life that would give me a dream like this? Yeah. And in this particular case, then, because I had been so hurt, is not the right word, but outraged. Yes, I think outrage is much better. I was so outraged by some of the attacks that I'd read about happening against women in India that I felt that this dream was really an expression of that outrage. And I saw a man, I saw a woman, I saw fire, I saw a desert, I saw a shawl made with hands, very ancient, and I heard a song in all that brightness, in that glare of dryness and hardness, I heard a song. So all these things I felt were saying something to me, and it is like taking a thread out of them, or taking one image, and then all the other images start to follow and become, in my case, a kind of fable.
Right. And then you write the screenplay and you put it down on paper. Does that feel like that part of the process when you write things down can only be, going back to the language that we were talking about, can only be liberated if you translate them in image form during the making of the movie? I don't know if that's a trivial question.
No, I think it's very important because, our language is on one level simply meant to communicate. The more clear you can be, the better. However, our language also holds sound, which means that it has musicality. All right, and like music, sound can become ambiguous. It can actually lead you elsewhere. So when you say sound, you can also sometimes say, because you're following a sound, off the sound, you say sound and sense, sound and sand, It leads you in a different way than making a sentence which is logically correct.
I see.
Yeah? And the script, to be quite honest, usually happens with me in two ways. One, I write a script for myself where I can do all kinds of play with sound and sense and images. However, I need to raise money for my film. So I write a second script, which is meant to communicate, to pass on to my best abilities the feeling that this story, carries for me. And if I can put it in a kind of story form, it will capture, it will almost become like a hook that will allow the feelings that usually we suppress, because these are very painful feelings, to rise. So the script is often just an excuse to find a producer who, by reading it and seeing it very clearly on paper, can then make a budget and say, all right, this is doable.
Yeah.
All right. And it's working here, so hopefully it will work as a film.
All things that need to be done but aren't and are important, but then the film becomes something else. Does that also mean that you remain open to changes during production?
And that is the kind of producer that you really need.
Uh-huh.
That someone who understands that the script is very good and the story is clear, but when you go out into the desert, You face the wind, you have your actors, you have costume, you know, you have all these different colors, you have the camera. These interactions are going to be challenging, and they will speak to each other. And in that speaking of all these elements, which were simply words on paper, other things will come into being. And a great producer is the one who encourages that, not someone who says, oh, that's not there in the paper. You know, please, 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 just do what is there in the paper. That means you're denying what is the most important part of filmmaking. Filmmaking.
Yeah, exactly. And also maybe allowing the film to become something that its own, that is its own thing. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. Exactly. Because the rhythms of a film, how it progresses, the relationship that it creates with time and space, are very different from how words do it.
I see. Yeah. And in that sense, then the cinematography becomes important because of it sets up a rhythm. Yeah, like a musical rhythm.
It sets off a rhythm, absolutely, but it does something else. You know, light, as we can see right now, sitting out here in Locarno, gives us a sense of the world being in bloom, you know, that the world having something to say to us. Now, we are in a kind of shadow, and the shadow holds us in safety, and it cools our body, but the sun is close by, so we know we are not very far away from light. Yeah, right. If we go further in, we'll enter a kind of darkness and a greater coolness. And sometimes that cool is good because it allows you to hibernate, to think about things, to think about your world. And then you come into the semi-shadow where light and dark meet. And then here is a world of choices that you choose, whether you go in or out.
I see. You know? Are those emotions intensified when you're shooting in a setting like the desert?
Absolutely, because light is the great given there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And the more light you have, the greater shadows you have, the deeper shadows, the darker shadows, and a range of tonalities. And also the color changes because of the intensity of light. And color is like light itself, you know, or darkness.
Yeah.
You know? So the desert then becomes a kind of canvas of feelings. Each gradation of light, each tonal stroke of light is actually saying something to you. Not saying, but actually asking you to allow that caress to be felt in your body.
Yeah.
You know? So these are the things that make cinema so powerful, because it's speaking to you in a very, very insidious way.
Yeah.
Underneath, you know, all your ready-made ideas of listening, it goes underneath and tells you things that surprise you.
Yeah, you know? And am I able to do that because it submits you in a way? You sit there as a spectator. You sit there and you look at the screen. There's nothing you can do to change the story, so it forces you to see things in that way.
I think all filmmakers have a responsibility.
Yeah.
I know people talk, let's say, about immersive cinema.
Oh,
you know, that you go in and you're totally immersed in what happens. And I think that is a little irresponsible.
Yeah.
What I think we need to do as artists, you know, of whatever kind, is that we have to take you into another world, but at the same time give you a space, you know, that you can contemplate the other world.
Absolutely.
You know, not get lost in it, but contemplate it and then decide for yourself, how do you want this world to affect you? I don't want to affect you forcefully. I want you to allow yourself to be infected.
I can't even tell you how much I agree with what you just said, especially with the with VR being called the future of cinema. I'm like, it's a different thing.
It's a different thing.
We've talked about so many things, but we must spare a few words about your work with the actors.
Sure.
And fantastic performances too, so it's only fair that we give them a shout out.
Certainly, of course, yeah. Let me talk about Gulshifteh first. You know, in terms of working with her, I think both of us had a gift. And this gift came from the desert. In the very early days of shooting the film, we happened to be on a sand dune. high above the desert, and we saw a very young deer prancing in the desert, and it had this beautiful joy of being born. It must have been 2 weeks old or something, and it was still finding its feet, you know, and it would run around and play around, and then there was a moment when it just came to a still. It just became still. However, in that stillness, you could see it quivering. You know, that life within it would not allow it to stay still, really. It was just quivering with all kinds of emotions. And the way it stopped, the way it was, the way it stopped there, it was like suddenly as though the universe was speaking to it and it was listening. And then in a moment, it jumped again. And the way it ran off, you think it could have, you know, jumped into the sky. And this is a quality that I think Gulshifteh holds as an actress. That she enters the world with ferocity, with curiousness, with openness. And she dances within it. And then there are moments when she stops. It is almost as though the whole universe stops with her. And she makes you listen in that stillness to the world around you and inside you. She really takes you inside. And then she's off again to take you into other parts of the world. She opens the world to you, and she opens yourself to yourself. That is the great power that she has as an actress. And I think it is that young deer that told us or gave us a hint as to how we could work with the character of Nooran in my film. And both of us then tried to carry that rhythm, that unexpectedness in what she does into my film. With Irfan, the thing is, this is my second film with him. And therefore, we have such a great love, regard, and understanding of each other's desires as an artist that we, in fact, don't speak much. And when we are taking a shot, what we do really is we listen to each other's intonations, or we listen to how the voice modulates. I look very carefully at how he's standing or how he turns. And he's watching me in terms of my breathing, you know. And it is almost like two musical instruments that we communicate with each other. We begin by improvising, you know, finding the right note, and then we are ready to perform together, you know. So it's very much like creating music with him. And he has that immense humbleness of a great actor to allow everything to affect him. You never feel that there's anything predetermined about his performance. The wind touches him and he reacts to it. A word comes from his co-actor and he reacts to it. His costume flutters in the wind and there's something that happens in his body. He's constantly alive in the frame. And by being alive, he makes us alive to the world and the feelings that are within the frame. So working with these two actors, you can imagine my joy. And that is how we shot the film, despite the fact that it is a film in many ways quite dark before it becomes a film of hope. We really enjoyed the shooting of this film because it gave our imagination a great play, and we allowed each other to test that imagination, to push it and go further. And I think as actors, as a director, we learned a lot from each other.
And I think I, watching the film, also felt that I was allowed to push my own imagination watching it. And I certainly enjoyed every single second of it. I was very much into the movie. Such a pleasure talking to you. And thankfully, we're able to stretch out our interview. Thank you very much for talking with us. It was a great pleasure.
It's always a pleasure talking to you. I remember you from last time. And thank you very much. I enjoyed this very much.
Thank you. And hopefully, the Piazza Grande screening will go ahead tonight. And lots of people will see your movie, which I remind our listeners is called The Song of Scorpions. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.